You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people, places, and workplaces of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis, and today we're headed back into the office.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah.
A scene from the classic Mike Judge movie Office Space. You probably have seen it. And if you've ever worked in an office, there was a time when a coworker could walk up to your cubicle and ask to see that report. Today, maybe you chat over Slack or Zoom, because many workplaces cleared out pretty fast when the pandemic hit. More than 70% of employees told the Pew Center that they were doing all or most of their work from home these days. That's compared to pre-COVID, when that number was more like 20%. Yesterday, Governor Gavin Newsom announced that the state would be back to regular business, fully open by mid-June if everything goes as planned. That has many office employees concerned about the prospect of heading back to work in an actual office. So to calm some of those nerves and to take a look forward, we've decided to turn to some experts. Regina Phelps is a pandemic planner. She's the founder and CEO of Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. Sadal Neely is a professor of business administration at the Harvard Business School on the East Coast. And Todd Wolfson is an attorney and managing partner at CDF Labor Law in Orange County, where he counsels California employers on workplace issues in the wake of the pandemic. And I want to welcome you all. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be with you.
Hello.
Thanks, Steve.
Todd, I want to start with you. Your company assembled this task force to put together guidance for employers here in California during the pandemic. And, you know, as these offices begin to open up again, especially in LA and Orange counties, one of the first things that I'm curious about is can employers require their workers to get vaccinated to be back in the office?
Yeah, we did put together a kind of a task force and been providing resources available for employers since probably March of last year. I've become a kind of a COVID lawyer 24/7. But that's the question that all employers are asking, whether their folks come back to an office or coming back to a restaurant or even delivery drivers for that matter. Can we, for peace of mind purposes, health purposes, insurance reduction purposes, require our employees to get vaccinated? And the short answer is you can, with some caveats, because we're in California. You have to accommodate people that perhaps have a disability or a medical condition that prevents them from getting vaccinated, or if they have a sincerely held religious belief, that also has to be accommodated. And then the kind of the pragmatic answer is, if you do want to require your folks to get vaccinated, the employer has to pay for the time spent going to get vaccinated, which may be hours, the travel time to get to wherever they get the vaccine, the cost of the vaccine itself. And then, of course, it has to be available in your area. So certainly, based on what county you're in, there's a lot more availability in Southern California right now than there is in Northern California. So employers can do it. But our advice right now is to tell employees to encourage them to be vaccinated and have it on a voluntary basis, because requiring something that may not be available or may be very expensive can be more problematic for the employer, which we're all trying to reduce the amount of problems and drama in our life.
Regina, you focus on crisis management, also on planning too, and there's a lot of planning going into getting people back into the office, especially after the past year that we've all dealt with. Offices are looking to open, employees are looking to come perhaps back on site. How do people best plan for those things?
That's a really great question, Steve. And let me just say, the first thing that we say to our clients is, before you decide you're going to go back, there's three questions that we ask them to look at. The first is, why are you going back? Now, that may sound kind of silly, but we've been working successfully and remotely for over a year in many businesses. And the question is, why are you going back? What are you going to get by going back? And that will help really frame how you actually attempt to go back. So the first one is a deep dive in the question, why are you going back? And then to also really seriously look at what's worked in this remote lifestyle that you've had. And secondarily, what needs improvement? And if you can kind of really dig into those three questions deeply, then it really helps you begin to look at going back. But then if you're obviously going to go back at some level, then the question is, well, how do you go about that? And there is so many things that has to be considered. And what I would say to all of your listeners is that for the next, probably till the beginning of next year or longer, when you go back to work, it's going to be a little bit, frankly, like working from home, except you'll be required very likely to still have a mask on, even if everybody is vaccinated in your cohort, still be masked, still be distanced. And so the workplace is going to really reflect that. You're going to see when you go back to work that there'll be all kind of signage everywhere about distancing, 6 feet or more, restrictions in elevators, one-way hallways, one-way stairwells. You'll see lots of different spacing. Hopefully what you'll be having in a workplace will be increased ventilation. The good thing about being in Southern California, Orange County, you can open your windows in many parts of the year. You'll be hopefully looking at increasing your filtration, so you'll have better filtration. There's something called a MERV 13 filter. And then the other thing, frankly, is that we don't want you cramming a bunch of people into a conference room. And so if you're going to be doing meetings, you might still be, frankly, on Zoom, even though you might be in the office because of the way your office might be configured. And I'm hoping that employers are going to spend the upfront time educating people about what to expect when they go back, so they're not surprised when it looks very different.
You mentioned, Regina, of course, the signage, you know, one-way hallways and things that we already see like in retail establishments, too. Like if you walk into a Nordstrom or something like that, and you know, we don't want to dismiss the fact that there are people who don't work in an office. Their office is like a grocery store or a department store, or maybe a restaurant. That's something. They have to be there, Sidal. They have to be at the restaurant. They have to be at the retail establishment. But not everybody who works in an office has to be in the office. And you've done a lot of remote work assessment, right? And I wonder, what have you heard from employees vis-a-vis remote work?
Employees love working from home. In fact, the several surveys that have been conducted in the last few months, to the tune of 87% of employees want to retain some form of remote work in their professional arrangements. Of that number, about 25 to 30% want to retain it full time. My new book that came out a week ago is called Remote Work Revolution, because work has been revolutionized. The way that we operate, the way that we engage, and I agree with Regina full-heartedly. We have to ask the question of why are we going back when, in fact, the majority of employees don't want to go back. So enter the concepts of hybrid workplaces, where you're going to see a limited pool of people who are in the offices. And this is where we're headed, post-pandemic.
But how do you, I mean, the thing about it, Sidal, is how do you get employees? Yeah, employees are going to say, I don't want to, who wants the commute? Who wants to, you know, I mean, I can work in my PJs if I want. I mean, do you have like a survey? Do you send out, you know, a company-wide email saying, you know, this is what we want to do? What is it, you know, what are the best practices going forward?
Yes. So there are best practices. In fact, the first thing you want to do is survey your entire employee base anonymously, asking them what their preferences are. And the preferences will range anywhere from I want to come in 1 to 2 days a week to all the way to I want full remote. And the patterns that we're seeing across organizations, across regions have been so consistent that I've now memorized them. The second thing that you want to do is you come up with a policy that's directly aligned with the critical tasks that the organization has to get done really well. Who needs to be on site, the essential people? How do we build a rotation program, understanding fully the level of fluidity that's optimal for our business and our work? And then you put systems and processes in place, including that you need to build people's competencies around remote work as well as digital first mindsets. We haven't developed skills, we've been surviving. And finally, the large organizations have already started to bring in chief remote officers into their C-suite, because now this is all about our greatest assets, our employee base, and a distributed workforce.
Todd, are there risks about slowly bringing people into the office again? I mean, if that is indeed the case, let's say a company doesn't want to do this hybrid model and they're bringing people back slowly in phases. Is there a risk of maybe discrimination, or, you know, we're picking winners and losers, and there are some legal issues about that?
Yeah, there's quite a few, and I guess leave it to the lawyer to mention the thorns in the rose garden that is working remotely. But I think it's important to note that bringing the employees back, you want to bring them back in a measured way. You want to think to yourself, who do we want to bring back first? What do we want to get rolling out first? And then it's just like in a hiring situation. Take a look at the group of people you're bringing back, and the group of people, you know, your whole population of employees, are the people that we're selecting to come back, that we're preferring, are they people under 40? Are they people that are more white than people of color? Are they people that are more male than female? You need to have all those discussions because, yeah, discrimination lawsuit and age discrimination is probably the number one that I've seen coming out of the pandemic, because there's this concept out there that we need to protect people that are over 65. Well, okay, that's great, but that doesn't mean you prefer people under 65 such that, you know, you discriminate against people that are over 65. And then having the people, once they come back into the workplace, like I said, you've still got people that are working from home. And the best advice I can give to any employers out there, the number one stealth liability lawsuit out there right now in California, is if you have people working from home, they are going to be using their home electricity, their home internet, their cell phone. They're going to be using a lot more of their personal costs to do work. And in California, you got Labor Code Section 2802 that says you have to reimburse employees for costs associated with performing their jobs. And the best way to avoid that is to pay people that are working at home some kind of a monthly stipend. Doesn't have to be a whole lot, but, you know, $20, $25, and tell them this is for the additional electricity, internet, cell phone charges that are difficult to calculate that we know you're incurring working for us at home. And if in any particular month you think it's more than that, submit an expense report, documentation will take care of it. But there's a ton, dozens of class actions and private attorney general act claims right now against employers for employees working at home, who the argument is that you're transferring all of your cost infrastructure from the business to the home-based employees. And it only takes one employee to hook up with a lawyer and bring that lawsuit. You could have 500 employees that swear on a stack of Bibles that they don't want to sue their employer, but the lawsuit can still be brought on their behalf because one of their brethren or sistren wants to bring a claim for their home-based expenses not being compensated.
Siddall, stipends, people working from home, they're you know, remote, doing the stuff that they would normally do in the office, but they're using all that energy. I mean, is that a thing? Are you talking about those kinds of things?
It is a thing, and I'm actually really, really glad that that's a point that Todd just raised, because some companies in the Bay Area, like Twitter, are actually giving stipends so that people are equipped, because the wear and tear now is in our homes. We're using our Wi-Fi, et cetera. And what we have found is that certain demographic groups are struggling much more than others with the wear and tear, with the working conditions, space, ambient noise, which is one of the reasons why productivity is affected. Productivity typically goes up with remote work. There's 30 plus years of research that has evidenced that across many industries and companies, provided certain conditions are met, including the workspaces, work conditions, ambient noise. If you have, you know, a number of very small children in your home, pets, it makes it much more difficult to work. So stipends, or to find ways to equip people very regularly in furniture, in broadband, and otherwise, becomes really important, because the reality is employers are saving millions of dollars when people go home to work and they begin to reduce their real estate holdings. So it's a very important topic, very important to make sure that employees are taken care of. And ultimately, it's going to be a compromise in negotiations. To me, if you have 87% of your employee base wanting to retain some form of remote work, who holds the power is the fundamental question. Employees, employers, organizations have to find a way to meet people halfway, because the virtualization of work has come upon us. The virtualization of careers has come upon us. We cannot unsee and not experience all that we've experienced with virtual work. So this idea that people are going to go back to full-time work in the types of positions that enables or allows for remote work is going to be something, a tension that organizations have to resolve.
You know, I think the before we let you guys go, this has been so informative, by the way. How can employees themselves, like if you are coming back into the office, advocate for the changes that they want to their office spaces? Regina, I mean, you know, ventilation system addressed, rights that they would have, or in, you know, forcing the company's hand to address their concerns if they believe that it affects their health.
Yeah, I think what we'll start to see is that there will be likely complaints issued to OSHA in particular if people get back into the workplace and they feel that their employer has not taken adequate protections. I think as you mentioned earlier, Steve, that everybody sees the signage already. They already see what's happening in retail environments. And so if an office has not done a good job of preparing their environment and educating their employees, I could see there could be a big pushback about people refusing to go to work and or contacting somebody like OSHA. And so I think what I would say is that for employers, the best thing they can do is to really educate and communicate and really reach out and talk to their employees about expectations, what to expect, and to really also bring people back slowly. And then, you know, see how it works. Make modifications, make changes, because you'll find that maybe what you thought was a brilliant idea isn't so brilliant. And so you can modify and change things. And then also do that for maybe as much as 60 days. And then begin to add the next 10 or 15%. And then maybe wait a couple of weeks. And then the next 10 or 15% as you continue to increase your population. But I think the idea of practicing, seeing how it works, educating, refining, and really listening. My clients who have done the best in the pandemic have demonstrated empathetic leadership. They are attentive to what their employees are talking about and needing. And the ones that don't are actually having people that are leaving because they just feel like it's just not worth it. And so I think that's really important, is to listen, pay attention, refine, start small, and then move forward.
I want to thank you all. What an interesting and fascinating panel. Saadal Neely, professor of business administration at the Harvard Business School, author of the new book, Remote Work Revolution. Regina Phelps, pandemic planner, founder, CEO of Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. Todd Wolfson, attorney and managing partner at CDF Labor Law down in Orange County. I want to thank you all.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Steve.
It was a delight to be with you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now that we've scaled the giant topic of returning to the post-pandemic office, let's swim on over to something completely different, like where to find some of the best fish sandwiches in Los Angeles. Catholics and people of other religions have for centuries had a tradition of eating fish on Fridays during Lent. Well, Lent is over now since Easter has passed, but you don't have to be Catholic to enjoy a good fish sandwich. Food writer and podcaster Cesar Hernandez has made a study of where to find some of the tastiest fish sandwiches around LA, and he's with us right now. Hey, Cesar.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm all right. You wrote about this in LA Taco, and you first developed your love of the fish sandwich working at McDonald's in Maywood.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, the Mickey D's Filet-O-Fish, there are some folks who would object, saying that that's not necessarily fish.
Mm-hmm.
What say you, Caesar? Is it fish?
I mean, it's close enough to fish, so to like fool me at least when I was 19, it was definitely what I ate a lot of.
I'm guessing though, it's not on your list of the best fish sandwiches, right?
I mean, it kind of feels, and I think what I wanted to capture with this list is that like it feels like the grandfather of fried fish sandwiches. You know, like it is kind of like the platonic form of a fried fish sandwich. And I think that most of the places that I covered or tried to highlight have, you know, are at least in conversation with it to an extent.
What does it take, Caesar, to make a good fish sandwich? I mean, are there ingredients? You know, you got to be really careful with the texture and how you prepare it, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I focused on fried fish sandwiches for the most part. And every single entry on the list has its own like character and attitude or thing that it's going for. Also like preparation of the fish, which is, I think is important here. So, you know, something like the first one on the list, which is Little Fish, it's closer to like a fish and chips batter, you know, like beer battered, kind of like an airy crust. And then you have others that use like flour or like panko or cornmeal. It just depends. It's because there's so many different styles of fried fish. And each spot that I picked is different from the other.
Well, tell us about the sandwich, the fish sandwich over at Little Fish, which isn't actually a restaurant, right? It's chefs who are working out of a home.
That's right. So the team behind Little Fish, they met when they were working at the restaurant Son of a Gun. That's the John and Vinny's restaurant that sells, you know, kind of like elevated bar food.
Son of a Gun's over on 3rd, right?
Yeah. And they formed together at like, and they wanted to do like a fish fry concept. And this fried fish sandwich that they had just kind of became like an off menu thing that like customers would ask for. And now it seems like they're really rolling with it. And like, that's one of the main attractions. It's a koji cured fish, which, you know, is like this fermenting agent usually used for like sake or like soy sauce. And you can use it for fish or different proteins. And it kind of brings out this like this umami flavor in it. So like, you know, you already have this like well-seasoned fish and then you fry it in beer batter. And like, it's very like rich and crunchy and like it just hits all the spots that you would want from like a fried fish sandwich.
There's actually hot fish too. I mean, we've talked about hot chicken on this program before, mm-hmm. but there's hot fish over at this chicken place in the Crenshaw, the Baldwin Hills area called Hotville.
That's right.
What's that one like? I mean, so this is spicy fish, right?
Yeah. So this one I think is probably the one that's like just bursting with flavor and like seasoning. So Hotville is run by Kim Price at the Crenshaw Mall. And usually, you know, they have the Shaw, which is the chicken sandwich, and you can choose your level of spiciness, but you can also sub out the chicken breast for hot swai, which is like the fish swai. And it comes with this cup of like kale coleslaw. Mm. And that's supposed to be like the cooling agent, but like the fish is just like, they're tender little like, almost like buttery nuggets of hot swai that just like burst with like hot oil and like seasoning. I actually think that one is probably the most flavorful on the list.
You've got a food truck on your list too called Yes Aquatic. That's a double S. So I say yes. Tell us about Yes.
So this one I think is probably like the cutest one. so they have like this concept, which is like a play on the Wes Anderson movie, The Life Aquatic of Steve Zissou, which is like, you know, they have like these very bright colored outfits in the movie, and they usually have red caps. But here, all of the employees or all the cooks and chefs on the truck, on the lonchera, they wear an orange cap and like kind of like a sailor outfit as an homage to that, because they do focus on like the most recent catch. And the two that I highlighted on the list were the fish katsu, which has a fish that's battered in panko, and it has this like this great tartar sauce, and it has a sheet of nori, which is, you know, seaweed, and it even has like bonito flakes to get like that extra fishiness. which is, you know, just dried like fish flakes. But then they also have another one called the fried shark sandwich, which is shark fillet that kind of like protrudes out of the sandwich on both sides. And that one has like a kind of a thick shell to it and is also similar to like a Nashville style because it's got like that seasoning on top, that like dusting of chilies.
A little heat.
Yeah.
Man, you got my mouth watering with some great fish all across LA, and I can't wait to try all of them. Thanks so much, Cesar Hernandez, food writer, podcaster. You can find, by the way, some of his recommendations at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Cesar, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And if you do get fish and you go back to the office, whatever you do, don't warm the fish up in the microwave. Just don't, please. Tomorrow's episode with theme parks in California opening back up. Let's hit Magic Mountain, shall we? Check us out online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Find any episode that you want. Subscribe to the podcast, too. We'd love to see you online. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, PJ Shahamat, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. Thanks for your ears and for your time tonight. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great Wednesday night.